This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
To the show. Thank you for watching or listening wherever you may be. I'm excited about today's episode as this interview allows me to combine my two favorite things, which are baseball. If you know me, obviously, you know that it's baseball, and then just traveling the world. My guest today is no stranger to either one of those things, as he is a true global baseball ambassador, and I can't wait to get into this with him. Mr. Peter Caliendo, welcome to the show, Peter.
Man, how are you? Thanks for having me, man. This is a great honor for me to be on your show.
Absolutely, man. I can't tell you how this is a thrill for me, because you and I have talked, you know, on phone calls and things like that over the years, but it's good to finally get to do this. So thank you so much. Usually the way I start these shows, this one's a little different. I got to let you know right up the front. I mean, I usually talk to people that grew up like I did. You and I talked prior to going live. I grew up overseas. I grew up in Asia. But the fact that, you know, you kind of combine my two favorite things, you know, baseball and I'm a coach just like you, you know, it's in our DNA, so to speak. Right. The fact that I'm a baseball guru, and then I also love to travel, and I love to explore new places and grew up overseas. I can't wait to pick your brain. This is going to be fun. We've got about an hour, but I can't wait to pick your brain. So the way I usually start these, I let the guests kind of introduce themselves. And if you don't mind, if you could just kind of talk about, you know, summarize your upbringing, where your family is originally from, your Chicago connection, which is another thing we have in common.
Yeah.
And then obviously your baseball life. So I'm going to turn this over to you right now, but thanks again for joining. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, Ben, first of all, thanks again. And I got to tell you, you know, we got a lot in common. Like you said, Chicago, Asia, yeah. Baseball. I mean, there's so much in common here. You know, I'm just, I guess, like everybody else, in some ways that's in the game. I started off when I was young, you know, I saw an ad in Baseball Digest, you know, and that's going to date me, because some people probably wonder, Baseball Digest, what's that? It was a little magazine, you know, that came every month or every week, I think it was. And I saw an ad, and this was after, you know, I think I was about 14, 15 years old. I saw an ad in with Mickey Owen Baseball School in the school in Missouri, right? And I wanted to go to baseball school because I wanted to get better. So my parents, coming from Italy, you know, they came when they were 21 years old, didn't speak the language. I mean, that's another story in itself. God bless them for coming here. They came here to help my brother and I, obviously, be, you know, get into the States, be Americans. You know, so I asked my parents, I said, you know, can I go to the baseball school? Well, you know, it wasn't, my parents were the type that they were going to help you if you really loved what you're doing, what you want to do. They didn't have a lot of money. Well, they did send me to baseball school. My first day at the baseball school, I never wanted to come back. I should say, I never wanted to stay because, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere in Springfield, Missouri. You know, bugs, different type of bugs, no air conditioning, no pools, nothing. It was all baseball. And the first thing I said was, I'm going home. My dad said, no, I don't think so. We paid for it. You're staying the whole time. Make a long story short, 10 years. So that was really where my baseball began. I started as a student, counselor, instructor, director of baseball instructions. And then, you know, because of going to the school, I met so many people, so many great coaches, that everything kind of snowballed from there. You know, the rest is history. You know, 40 countries, teaching coaches, doing a lot of other things in the game. And I'm sure we can talk about some of those. So I don't want
to. Oh, we will. Yeah, I can't wait to pick your brain. I love it. That's a great story. Yeah. The only hiccup I have is that you're in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
Hey, that's Cardinal territory.
And 100 degrees, humidity was unbelievable, you know. I mean, and it was all baseball. That was the fun about it. You know, you're talking about in the mornings, you know, fixing a field. Yeah. You know, right after that, practice. Right after that, lunch. Then fix the field again. Then another practice. You know, I mean, so we learned how to fix fields. And then we had to play games at night and umpire a game at night. So every day, that was the schedule. So we learned how to take care of fields. Take care of kids, obviously, and, you know, cabins. If you were coaching, you were, you know, obviously working with players, umpire. I mean, think about all the things that you're learning all summer, and I was there 10 years doing that. If you didn't learn something, you know, you weren't breathing then because you weren't awake.
I love that. Great story. Great story. So I got to ask right off the bat, who was your favorite player growing up?
You know what? For me, it's easy because it was Pete Rose. Maybe because it was a sin first name. But no, really, the reason being is I love just the way he played. You know, the hustle part of it. And so I emulated
Charlie Hustle, right? Charlie Hustle.
Absolutely. Hustled all the time. That's one thing coaches tell you you can do. You don't need talent for that. You need to develop a great habit because I think habits is how you continue to do things. But as far as anything else, that's why Charlie Hustle was the guy.
No, and it's funny you say that because he was – I don't want to say he was before my time because he wasn't. It dates me too. He played, you know, as a little kid, I knew exactly who Pete Rose was. And when I was in high school, I wore the number 14 because that's what his number was.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same reason because he was Charlie Hustle. You know, you can get by with talent, right? But there's little things that he had. I mean, he hustled. Everything he did, he hustled. You know, hit king, so to speak. So it's
If you think about it, excuse me, the question nowadays would be interesting. If Pete Rose went to a tryout, would he even be looked at? You know, here's a guy that didn't have a strong arm, really didn't run that fast.
Yeah.
You know, but man, could he hit from both sides? I mean, think about it. A guy can hit from both sides and get that many hits. Imagine how hard he worked, and he worked very hard at it. So just a great talent, but really not the skills that we're looking for all the time.
Oh yeah, totally. He wasn't a power guy. He just made contact and he did what he had to do. So I love this. I'm already off to a great start, man. I can talk to you forever. I already know that. So let's talk about your jump right to it. Then you used to be Team USA's head coach, right? If you don't mind, if you can talk about how that happened and all that experience, what was that like?
Yeah, I've got to mention Dick Birmingham. A lot of coaches at the ABCA would know Dick because he was a very famous high school coach who spoke at conventions around the country. Matter of fact, he's in the Iowa High School Hall of Fame, and he's not even from Iowa, but he spoke there 14 times to put him in the Hall of Fame. But one of these just my top mentor when I was 15. That's who I met at the baseball school. And from there, he took a liking to me and really helped me a lot. And what happened was Coach Birmingham got an opportunity with another good friend now, Kevin Whitworth, who at the time was taking teams overseas. And Kevin had the opportunity to compete in the Pan Am Games for 16, 14, and 12 years old at that time. The president of USA Baseball gave him that ability to compete in those games. Well, Coach Birmingham became one of the coaches. And now, there was no 16-year-old national team at the time.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So when I got on board, Dick asked me to come to Brazil with him to compete in the Pan Am Games for 16-year-olds and be one of the assistant coaches. You know, just a great honor because I was really young and really didn't deserve it. He just gave me the opportunity. Many other coaches would have had a much better chance of making it as a coach. But it kind of snowballed because then, you know, what I did is I took – kind of the bull by the horns. And I told Kevin, I said, Kevin, hey, listen, you got the teams going overseas. Why don't you let me run the Pan Am teams as far as selection, identifying players, hiring the coaches and all that, along with Coach Birmingham. So we started with USA Baseball, the first 16-year-old pilot program. Make a long story short, very successful. Why? Because we had guys like Gordy Gillespie. We had Bill Olson. We had different guys from around the country on the board who helped us identify players. So we played in the Pan Am Games for 6 years, won 3 golds, 3 silvers, about 25 guys in the big leagues, probably the most famous guys. At that time, remember, like you said earlier off the air, we didn't have the technology we have now, right? So, I mean, we're making phone calls, we're checking stats, we're calling scouts, we're calling high school coaches, especially because most of these kids were freshmen. I mean, we're talking about, you know, babies, but we're not talking about your seniors, you know, number one draft picks. These were freshmen, sophomores. So our biggest two players would be David Ross, manager of the Cubs currently, and Jason Worth with the Nationals.
Yeah.
So what happened then, because the pilot program was so successful, USA Baseball took it over as an official national club where it's funded by them, because we had to fund it at the time. We had the ability to play in the Pan Am Games, but we had to fund the whole program. Then fast forward, I also got the opportunity, because of being with USA Baseball, I got the opportunity of being a regional director of the Great Lakes NTIS, which is National national identification program for USA Baseball, seven states where you get, you know, identify certain players. Then you go to Cary, North Carolina.
I know Cary well. We talked about that before we went live. Yeah, I know. I was just outside of Asheville with my college ball. So.
Right. And then the last thing, in 1999 was a great honor. We went over with an independent team to compete in the Intercontinental Cup in Australia, which was the prelude and kind of the practice for the Olympics in 2000. Mike Quade was the manager, you know, third base coach for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Ken Medlock, who played Grady Fusion on Moneyball, he was the pitching coach, and Cash Beauchamp, AAA player and also, you know, independent manager, was one of the coaches. And that was a great opportunity because that was independent and major league guys. So my history of USA Baseball goes back about 30 years.
That's fantastic. What's your best coaching memory then? Managerial, coaching, either way.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Wow. And I'll tell you why it's a tough one. You know, the top coaching memory, no doubt, is representing your country. You know, putting on that uniform for the first time that says USA on it, standing on the line, listening to the national anthem. You're competing against some of the best teams in the world. No doubt about it. You know, when we won the gold with our 16U team here in Chicago, it was actually hosted in Chicago, and we beat Mexico. We also beat Cuba in St. Louis to win the gold medal game. You know, so, I mean,
what years are we talking?
Well, between 90 and 96, 93 was Chicago. I believe 94 was St. Louis, if I got it right. But 93 was Chicago. You know, again, with David Ross from 93, David was on that team. And, you know, it was just, you know, the thrill behind representing your country is nothing like it. That's why I tell guys and gals, like you know, because you travel around the world, you may not make the national team, but if you get an opportunity to compete somewhere around the world, do it. It's great representing your country in any sport, any way, any manner.
Hard to argue that, right? I love that.
I would have to say that's, you know, Ben, that's probably at the top of the list. You know, I'm not going to discount, you know, I was inducted in the Illinois High School Coaches Hall of Fame. You know, I guess you can call that a coaching honor, right?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, well, I didn't coach much in Illinois. I coached 1 year in high school, 1 year in college as an assistant. But they, you know, recognized me for my work around the world, and what a great association for, you know, to even step outside the box and put somebody in the Hall of Fame that really didn't coach in Illinois that much, you know, so that was a great honor.
Yeah, but you've, that's amazing. Either way, that's amazing. So, I do respect that about you. Excuse me. I want to jump to this next question because I think it's an important one. You know that we talked about this. I am currently coaching high school level, and I know a ton of friends of mine have kids in the younger years, even middle school age, and, you know, Babe Ruth leagues, you know, Ripken leagues, things like that. But I want to ask you, I want to pick your brain on this, but what's the best advice you give to today's players, especially those that are starting out, you know, right now, or those that are at the high school level? What's the best advice you could give in terms of today's players?
Yeah, it's probably a fitting question for me because I was a average to below average player, but I found a way to play, whether it be high school or college.
You and me both. Yeah.
But on the same point, here's where I failed, and I think a lot of young players nowadays really need to work on this, and that is I failed on the mental part. You know, when I didn't learn how to deal with failure early enough and understand, you know, what kind of and you know this as well as anybody else as a coach, what mechanisms to use when I do fail, how to rebound, how to handle it, or prior to, you know, a critical situation or pressure situation coming up, how do you prepare yourself for that situation, whether it's breathing or whatever the techniques are. I think that's extremely important for young players to understand. I think hopefully a lot of them have made enough errors when they're younger to learn from it, because that's, I think, the mistake we make in coaching. We don't allow young players before high school to make enough errors, enough mistakes, and understand how to learn, you know, how to deal with it. That's probably number one. Number two, to me, is finding ways for yourself to get better when people aren't looking. You know, what are you doing knowledge-wise to make yourself better, to train yourself? You know, not always depending on the coaches. You know, what are you looking for? What extra edge are you looking to do, you know, working on as a player? I think that's important. The other part is, know, how are you treating your teammates? You studying the game? You know, are you taking risks a little bit? You know, you know, those are things that I think if you're dealing as a young player, I think you need to really work on it the best you can. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely, and I love that. I love that. It's such an interesting. The reason I asked you this is because I've seen it. I've been seeing it more and more as the years go by with coaching. But you know, there's such an instant gratification mentality right now. They want everything quick. Back in the day, so to speak, when you were out, you know, you were playing, I was playing, things like that. We had to earn every little thing. You know, there's so much talent right now, and I love that. That's great. But right. It's the little things that are driving me crazy. It's the lack of fundamentals, you know, and I kind of strip them clean and we go back, and that's what we work on. That's what we're working on right now, actually, to be honest with you, preseason. It's just getting those fundamentals down, realizing that you have to have the fundamentals in order to take that next step. You know, let's break you down to move you forward. And I'm a stickler for that. And some of the guys, you know, that get it, understand the reasonings, and then others don't. They want that instant gratification. And that's, as a head coach, that's tough because I see so much talent. I want to make it very clear that there's a lot of talent out there right now, right? And it is, and I don't want to sell them short, but it's just the fundamentals are what bother me because I don't know necessarily if they quite get the understand the grasp of why fundamentals are so important. And that's, as a head coach, that's been my biggest issue that I'm trying to kind of, like I said, wipe them clean, let's start over and go from there. But that instant gratification, yeah, go ahead.
I think that, you know, because of technology coming on board the last 10 years, you know, and young players liking the technology aspect, there's no doubt about it. The fundamentals have taken a hit. And I think there's going to be that full circle. People are going to start to realize, look, technology is fine because it's a faster way to understand are you working the fundamentals well? So if I'm working on hitting, it just gives me a faster way to understand that I'm doing it correctly instead of trial and error where you're making, you know, it might take you 10 times to figure it out. With technology, you might figure it out in, you know, four times. So it takes that shortcut. But at the same time, you know, I mean, and I know we're going to get to this, but you've been to Asia.
Yeah.
I mean, fundamentally, Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
Best in the world when it comes to fundamentals. And they can overcome anything that you throw at them. You know, sure, they use technology at some point, but they don't overdo it, the technology. So I think that's what's important right there. I think you hit that on the button. I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I love that. Here's kind of a question that I might get some feedback on this, and I'm all for it. But we just talked about, you know, what advice would you give to today's players? What advice would you give to today's parents? Because it seems like there's been a little bit of a shift. Parents are definitely more involved, and that's great. No problem there. But what advice would you give to parents that have kids in either middle school, high school, that age?
If you don't mind, I'm going to back up a second.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll tell you why. At the high school level, too, and even at the youth levels, I think something that's changing is, you know, parents, this is for the coaches, parents are part of the program, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
So I have a philosophy. I do get parents involved in programs. I want them to know what we're doing. We do draw the line. And you're starting to see this more and more with some high school coaches. We do draw the line when it comes to playing time. You know, that doesn't, no, the parents have, there's no asking, there's nothing. And if a player has a question, then the player has to go to the coach. You know, right? Parent can't go there and ask about any of that stuff. But at the same time, it's nice to get them, you know, educated as far as what coaches are trying to accomplish. Because what happens is, especially at the younger levels, The coach works with the player, then he goes home, and now guess who's working with him? Maybe dad is, right? Or possibly mom. And, you know, if they don't know what they're working on together, they're conflicting the player. So I think there has to be some, and parents can be part of the process of the development because they can work with them at home on extra things and have some fun with them. And the coach can educate the parents a lot of times, you know, on what to do and how to do it. You know, and I'm talking about simple things, playing catch with them, maybe throwing some, you know, wiffle balls at them, you know, and just playing some games. So I think the parent can be part of that. So my message to the parent is educate yourself to help your kids the best you can. And where you get educated is from your baseball coach because they do it full time. If you're a high school coach, you're a high school coach, you're a teacher. You're an educator, right? So what better than to get it from the educator that studied how to deal with young people and how to work with them? The other part with parents is, and it's the toughest one, I get it. It's the ball games. When you go to the ball games, you know what? You have got to do your best to relax. Your kids are going to fail, especially in the game of baseball. The coaches tell players, right? You're going to fail. It's part of the game. It's how you deal with it is what makes you go further. So parents, do your best to relax, take it easy, let your kids play the game. After the ball game, you know, just take them out to dinner, wherever you go. If they want to talk about the game, let them talk about the game, listen to them. You know, if you don't know what to say, you know, just say, I love coming to watch you play. And I know that you're going to have ups and you're going to have downs. I really don't care, right? As a parent, if you have up and down, we have up and down at our work and our life. So don't worry about that part. So I think if parents can encourage young players and let them know that don't worry about it. We know there's going to be failure in the game, but we just love being there to watch you play and then go from there. And I think that's the best advice I can give the parents.
I absolutely love that. Let me ask you this. This isn't on the list of questions. I do my homework. But you and I both talked about this. I'm going to shoot from the hip a little bit. Do you think kids today are overcoached? And what I mean by that, I mean by the fact that, you know, they get it from the high school level, which is in my situation, it's me. A lot of kids today are having these personalized coaches, you know, pitching coaches, hitting coaches, things like that. Do you think, is that a detriment or is that a good thing?
You know, I think it depends. It really depends. I know it's going to be a cop out, but it depends on the individual player, how they handle it. And I say that because, you know, sometimes the high school coach doesn't have time to individualize things, right? You only have, well, take Chicago. You got 24 practices before the season begins indoors, right? And then you can get outdoors for a little bit. And now the season starts and you got 35 games maybe. You know, you don't have time to sit there and handle a Rapsodo individually and get into, you know, technique with them and drills. You have to set up the overall structure of it. Sure, you're working with players individually in some ways, but not in depth. So I think if they can get some extra work in, but I also believe that, you know, it's advantageous. And I know it's not easy, but for the high school coach, and I'm using high school as an example, but the high school coach, if that individual has a person that he goes to work with on specific skills, that they're on the same page communication-wise. Because if they're not, now you get the player confused. And that becomes more mental more than anything. Now, to answer your question, are we overloading some players with knowledge? Yeah, I think we are. I think we're overdoing it sometimes. Sometimes you just got to let them relax, let them go play. Let them feel for themselves, right? I think something that's changing in the game that's helping players is coaches are talking less, asking more. I think that's – when I started – they were telling us everything. So was I, right? I was telling them, I wanted to help that young man or girl, right? Tell them everything you can. Now it's more like, how do you feel? How does this feel? What do you think about this drill? Did that accomplish anything for you? You know, now getting feedback from the player, I think, is a big change in the game. And I think it's a positive change.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I want to make sure the listeners understand the reason you mentioned the ladies too, is that you're not only a baseball guy, you're a softball guy too. You've got words of wisdom on that end too. So, how much is too much? Like, how much is the overload of coaching where kids start to tune you out?
I think the overload comes from what I had, and that is when you're overloaded on fundamentals. Now, as you mentioned, that may not be the case as much nowadays because we don't seem to be focusing on the fundamentals as much. But there are a lot of coaches that do still focus on the fundamentals. I think you can focus on certain fundamentals too much and become robotic. And that becomes a mental block because that's what happened to me. I had a great swing but couldn't hit. Well, you know, I remember Ernie Banks telling me a long time ago, you work with him at a batting cage and he'd say, hey, Pete, you know, you got one of the best swings I've ever seen. This comes from Ernie Banks.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But I couldn't hit. Why? Because mentally, one, I couldn't deal with the failure. Two, I didn't have a program. I didn't go up to hit. I just went up to swing. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a plan. So I think if we have the right things, like the right teaching, if we're teaching a plan, how to prepare for a pitcher or how to react to what a pitcher is throwing to you and not necessarily our swing, I think if we're working on those things, I think that's important for young players. I think we can overload on the fundamental part sometimes. I mean, does that make any sense?
Absolutely. No, I'm with you 100%, which leads me to my next question. How much you know, we're kind of in a data shift now, right? Everybody's got a, you know, we're scouting over, almost overload of scouting, right? Like the data that's coming through, especially at the high school level. Do you think that's too much? I mean, at the high school level, my philosophy has always been, look, I want you to enjoy the game first. You know, we got to get back to that a little bit. But, you know, I coach with my gut, and which some people agree with, some people don't. It's all about data-based, even at the high school level. What's your take on all the you know, the data?
Well, you know it better than anybody. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends in high school. I mean, you know, come on, let's be realistic. First of all, the high school coach is an educator. Second of all, like you said, you've got to use your gut. You don't see pitchers that often the same time over and over. You don't even see the same hitters over and over. So statistically, I mean, how much a stat's going to help you? You know, I'm not convinced of that, because you're going to go more on what you're actually seeing, you know. And then the other part is, you know, what happened in the old days sometimes about, you know, like we try to teach our players, on, let's say on defense, you know, it's your responsibility defensively to read the hitter, to understand where the pitch is, to anticipate where the ball is going to be hit according to the bat angle, right? The velocity of the pitch, the location. You have to anticipate all that as a player. So you have to adjust on the count also, right? If it's an 0-2 count, what are most high school hitters going to do? You know, I mean, unless you're a third, you know, you're a third hitter, you're really not concerned about anybody else. You're more concerned about the third and fourth hitter. The other guys you should know really well, because they're going to pretty much tell you what they're doing. Yeah. So, yes, I think you can overload players with statistics in high school, and you can overload coaches also with statistics in high school. Now, when it comes to the training part, I think you can use it, but I think you have to be selective in what you're using it for, because players do like, you know, technology. So if you're going to use an example, if you're going to be hitting off a tee in a cage or taking batting practice, and you can afford to have a some technology, now they can see where the ball's hit, where it landed. Sure, that's going to help, right? Because that's fun, and I can't tell in a cage how well maybe I even hit that ball, if it was a base hit, if it was in the gap, if it dropped for a hit, you know, and all that. So I think that's kind of fun, and you can, and the players can learn from that. But I don't know if high school coaches need a whole lot of stats.
I agree with you. That's refreshing to hear, because I do agree with that. It's that's how I coach. Yeah, it's I'd say it's 90%, you know, just gut reaction to the game, right? And 10% probably just, you know, I do look at stats, obviously. If we get a repeated, you know, team, things like that, yeah, of course you're going to look at that. But
I'll give you an example, a quick one. When I was in independent ball, we used pens, colored pens and paper. That's how we started where the ball was hit, right? So to keep a player busy on the bench, nothing wrong with having them chart every hitter. Yeah. Because after two at bats, you've got a decent. It'll show where they're hitting the ball, right? Yeah. And then you can shift your defense accordingly the best you can. But most of the time, you know what, Coach? Let me ask you, Ben. Yeah. Here's a question for you. You got 12 seconds, 20 seconds between pitches, right? Yeah. Okay. You're going to adjust your defense? I don't think so.
No.
Your players got to do that. And then if you see somebody out of place that you possibly believe needs to be moved, you're going to move that particular player. But I can't sit through every pitch moving guys. They've got to do instinctively, and you don't have the stats for it. So they've got to learn how to do that on their own too, and that's a teaching process.
I absolutely love that answer, because that's one thing. Actually, we just had a preseason get together yesterday where we were working on that. I was talking about that. You know, there's only so much we can do as coaches. We can put them in the right situations, but it's almost like giving them the answers to the test, right? It's what they're going to do with it, you know? But that's exactly what I'm getting at, is what are they going to do with it? What are they going to do with that information that we give them? You know, it's you know, we can only do so much, and then they kind of have to take over, which is where leadership comes in too, right? You got to make sure as a coach, I rely a lot on my older guys, my captains, my upperclassmen, things like that. But yeah, it's something that's an adjustment. It's every game's an adjustment, right? Even if you play the team over and over again, you've got to be willing to, you know, no team plays the same every single game. And I appreciate that, respect that. So,
and you may see 2-3 pitchers in a game, 4 pitchers.
Yeah, absolutely.
The game.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. What about, let's talk failure for a second. You brought it up earlier. This is a game where you're 300 hitters, you know, you get a hit 3 out of 10 times. You're a Hall of Famer, right? What about at the high school level? I'm going to pick your psyche brain here in a minute, you know, right now, but what do you offer in terms of how do those kids get out of those slumps? How do those kids, you know, realize that, you know, this is a game of failure? You know, what advice would you give those kind of, you know, kids?
You know, I like the question. I'll tell you why, because that's, again, I'm going to go back to what I couldn't do because, well, for two reasons, and I'm not going to blame coaches. One, yes, we didn't train that way when I played, but I didn't take it upon myself to figure out either. You know, when I was failing, I should have done something. I should have read a book, should have done something, ask questions, you know, hey, how do I deal with this? Because I'm not dealing with it very well. And, you know, I think there's a positive for the game because you're seeing more and more of this. And that is coaches. And, you know, if you think about it as a coach, we're really not a baseball coach. We are a psychologist, psychiatrist.
Absolutely. Yes. Amen.
We should study the mental game a lot more. And I think more coaches are now doing that. More coaches are understanding the breathing methods, you know, the Ken Revisa theory of,
I read his book.
If you fail at something, you got to be able to flush it, right? Either with that little toilet he had or by a breath or by swiping the ground, something that reminds you that that's
looking
all
the foul pole, right? Fair pole, foul pole.
Exactly. Now, where does all this fall in? Here's, I think, the mistake we make. No doubt about it. And I think it's getting better. That is, those things have to be practiced daily in practice. It has to be a routine in practice. Every practice, every station that you have, there's got those techniques that each individual is using to deal with the failure aspect or preparing for the pressure has to be practiced, whether it's an individual drill or whether it's a team drill. And if you practice it during those times, you've got a better chance of succeeding in a ball game and understanding how to either prepare for it or deal with the failure, one or the other.
I love that, because I actually literally just talked to my guys yesterday. You know, it's what you do now that's going to make the game so much easier. You know, what we do here in practice, how hard you work, what fundamentals we work on, everything you do now, the mental aspect of everything we do in practice, that's going to transfer into the games, and the game's going to be, should be easier, right?
Sure.
And that's exactly, I love that, because I do believe, as a coach, I do believe the mental aspect of this this generation is huge. You know, we're trying to get them feeling good about themselves, but, you know, overcome so many things, because I get back to this again, like, you know, fundamentals, they're not what they used to be. You know, everybody's a home run hero, everybody's a Hall of Famer before they even can feel the ground ball, you know. That's my take, yeah.
No, and I understand that. And Ben, you know, the other aspect of this is, you know, we got to let kids, I know they go to a lot of tryouts, okay, and they go to a lot of showcases. And there's nothing wrong with those, okay? I think you should go to showcases. They need the experience. I think it helps with tryouts. I think you can overdo the showcases. I mean, you don't need to go to 10 a year.
I totally agree.
But here's the aspect of it. Where a lot of players, where I'm not seeing as many players that can compete, because they're not training to compete. They're training to just go through the motions a lot of times. And I think we got to be more competitive in practice, and we got to put more pressure on players in practice. And that depends on the level of the player. Not every player is going to be the same pressure, same level. But we've got to deal with more of that because of the fact that they're not used to dealing with that. They're used to going to a showcase. They're used to going where you get showcase, you get ground ball, you take, you know, five or six of them, 10 of them. If you make an error, you just do it over again. Well, that's not life. Life is when you make an error, you don't get to do it over again until the next time the ball's hit. So sooner or later, you got to put the pressure on players. I think we need to see more and more of that early on, especially at the high school level, before they get to high school, because otherwise they're going to have a tough time dealing with that.
I'm speechless because I agree with everything you just said, man. That's awesome. Yeah, we're gonna shift a little bit right now. I'm just looking at the time. We have about 30 minutes, but I wanna pick your brain. We're still sticking with baseball here, but I you and I have something in common in the sense that we've traveled the world, we've been all over the place. We're still baseball purists through and through. But I want to pick your brain because you've traveled to over 40 plus countries teaching this game. Something I admire, like you won't ever understand, man. That's fantastic. And teaching the game the right way, more so. In terms of promoting the game, Any great stories that, you know, you feel free to share, or like just in a sense that, you know, you've been to places that, wow, these guys actually have players and we didn't even know about.
Yeah. You know, first of all, when it comes to promoting, again, I'm just going to mention this for our audience in the U.S. and around the world, especially worldwide, because one of the things they're trying to do around the world is to get players to play the game, right? So we're all trying to do, even in the U.S., one of our biggest competition is soccer. Why? Because, you know, I played soccer when I was a kid in Italy, and, you know, it's fun. You're always running around. You know, it's active, right? There's not as much failure to the game of soccer individual as there is in baseball. So we've got to make sure, how do we get players to promote, how do we promote the game, whether it's in the U.S. or around the world? But we've got to figure out ways to get them to play the game early, but also it can't be the regular baseball game. You know, I talk about it all the time on my show. You know, I'm not a big fan of T-ball. But unless T-ball works, if it's working and kids are enjoying it, stick with it. I'm a big fan of a big bat with a big ball, right? You see the ball right there?
Yeah, I do. I love it. Yeah.
I'm 5 years old. This bat is about not even 2 ounces. I don't even know. It's so light. It's foam. Now, when you hit, the odds of you hitting this are percentage-wise are a lot higher. And I'm a fan of this along with smaller field, you know, where there's only 5 players on 5. There's more competition active. Every player's doing something. So to promote the game, to get them to play, you better do something fun. If you show them baseball, they're done because they're standing out in the outfield waiting for an hour for a ball to hit. That's not fun. They're not going to do it at a young age. So to answer your question from a promotional standpoint, that's what I love is doing promoting the game worldwide. I encourage that with coaches and leagues. As far as something unique, you know, for me, I guess interesting around the world would have been, I mentioned my first time in Cuba, you know, in 2007, I think it was, for the Olympic qualifier. You know, for an American to be in Cuba at that time with all the restrictions, with government paperwork, official government paperwork, and walking in Havana, Old Havana, deeper into the parts of Old Havana where the real people lived and meet the real Cuban people, and to look up and say, you know, look, I'm 90 miles from Miami, and I'm thinking, as an American, I'm standing here in Cuba. Not many people have that opportunity to do that. I can't believe that I'm doing that. And I bring that up because after 9 times being there, I learned a lot about Cuban baseball, and that is we think, oh, they must have 2 million players. There's 11 million people on the island. They must have 2 million players, you know, playing the game. Well, that's not the fact. The fact is there's only about 60,000 players playing the game in Cuba. When you look at the numbers of 60,000 players and what they've produced, number one criteria why they produce so many people and so many players in the big leagues is, one, they practice more than they play. Now, they have warm weather, so they might play 100 games, but they're practicing 200 times. You know, and you see that common theme around the world when you see really good baseball countries. You see at the younger levels I'm talking about, you see them practice more than playing games. And my fear here in the U.S. is that we're reversing that pyramid, and we're playing way too many games at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. Because, you know, when you're playing 80 games, 100 games at that age, that means you're not practicing a whole lot. Now, you got game experience? Possibly. But you said it perfectly earlier. What about the fundamentals? The fundamentals are the ones that are not only going to make you a better player, but they're going to keep you healthy because you're doing it right. So go back to your original question. Cuba, great story is, you know, I got there for the very first time, and you wanted to hear a story, right, about?
Yeah, absolutely.
And my 9th time there, I traveled all of Cuba training coaches. Now, listen. There's 1,000 coaches that have more experience than I do. I just happened to be in the right place, right time, met the right people, and was honored to be able to do this because I went around and helping coaches in Cuba. Cuban coaches are pretty good, but think about that. And I didn't realize it till I was there. And I know it's going to sound like bragging, but the story was out. I was the first American coach prior to the Cuban Revolution, or after the Cuban Revolution, to travel all of Cuba helping coaches. Now, that's a great honor, but guess what? Every time I do this, I'm learning more sometimes than I'm teaching. So, you know, it's that remember the, what's the old story? The small fish in the small pond. You know, this is the small fish in a big pond, because I was able to travel the world and learn from different coaches, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. And that's a big advantage.
That's a huge, wow. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I love that. One of these days I'd love to get down there, because I'm big on the history of the game too. I'm a student of the game. I always have been. Which leads me, you know, obviously I'd love to know how the Cubans train, how the Cubans do things. You know, I know fundamentally, right? They're pretty sound.
Well, first of all, you know, they're great athletes. You know, they play multiple sports. They call it, you know, and, you know, just like you see in the Dominican Republic, right? They grew up playing stick ball, like some of us did, right? We took rubber balls and threw them against the wall, and we had a hitter. We played a one-on-one game, right? We figured out we'd go to the park and lob the ball, right? Even if it was 9-on-9, the pitcher would lob the ball, so you hit it all the time, and then you play, right? Yeah. That's how you learn. Well, that's Cuba. That's the Dominican Republic. So one, you have great athletes. Two, and probably should be number one, they just, you know, like us, they have a love for the game, right? Now, people are going to say, well, they're going to want to get off the island too. Well, in Cuba, they couldn't get off the island at one time. You know, they still have to escape. Dominican Republic, they can get off the island if they get signed by a major league team. So, yes, that is a goal and an incentive. But really, they just love playing. They'll play all day, right? I mean, they never stop. So to answer your question, yes, the Cubans are very good on fundamentals. And they have a very organized, by the government, national organization for baseball. So it's all structured under one umbrella. They also have 16 academies where the specific players they pick between the ages of 12 and 18 go to those academies, and all they do is play baseball, go to school, and they sleep, eat there all the time. And that's how they pretty much come up sometimes with their national teams. So they have a pretty structured organization, very disciplined, very organized, and that's why you're seeing a lot of players come out of there.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, you just mentioned something that I didn't initially have down as our questions, but I want to talk to you about this. And I love it though. That's why you're here, right? I want to pick your brain. You're a guru, so to speak, right? You're, like I said earlier, you're an ambassador to this game, and that's why I find, you know, the way you think so important. But let's talk about baseball players in terms of multiple sports. Is that something you're in agreement with, in terms of, do you think it's important for baseball players to play multiple sports? Because I do get that feedback already with high school, not only parents, but just other coaches too. Like, I'm a believer that I think it's a good thing. I think it's important to play other sports. You know, don't just, you know, we're starting to see this so young, and maybe, you know, you agree or disagree, but we're seeing kids in like elementary school specializing in a sport, and I shake my head. I'm so glad that it's my generation growing up. My parents, they never forced me to do anything, but they recommended maybe playing all these sports and see which ones you like, you know, get a feel for it. But what's your take on baseball players playing multiple sports?
Yeah, I'm with you 1,000%. I'll tell you why, because again, you know, we're around some of the best experts in the world. We're not the experts on this. But we're around some of the best experts in the world. Science, you know, pretty much shows it, that when you're a multi-sport athlete at a younger age, first of all, it's a lot more fun, because you're not doing the same thing over and over again. It's only one sport. I wish I was a multi-sport athlete. Again, I'm going to go back to my career. If I was a multi-sport athlete, I'd be a much better player, no doubt about it. I played racquetball, but that was later, which also could have made my racquetball better. So to all the parents out there and all the coaches, listen, do your homework. The research shows it. Multi-sport athletes under the age of 12, and I'll tell you another reason, and the experts will tell you, there's a window, what's called the windows of trainability, between 6 and 12 years old, and that's to develop athletic skills. If they're not multi-sport athletes, they're not developing their athletic skills, their movement patterns with their feet and their hands. They're not developing those because they're only doing one sport. And the other aspect, we're not developing the muscles. Now you're talking about a possibility of a major injury, because one sport is developing certain muscles and the other muscles aren't getting the work they should get to balance it. And you could say, well, I can make that up with weights and other stuff. First of all, not everybody has the time to do that. Two, there's also a process for that. So, to go back to your question, look at Major League Baseball. 20 years ago, this was a stat 20 years ago, over 95%, not 98, players of Major League players were multi-sport athletes that made it to the big leagues. The other part I'll tell you, I had a golf expert on. She told me, and this was a golf trainer, she told me statistically there was only one big-time PGA golfer that was not a multi-sport athlete. So you do the math and do the homework, right? Let kids play a lot of sports. Let them see. You never know, right? Plus, you never know which sport is going to be their best one unless they try it, which one they like. So I agree with you.
I love it. I love it. Hey, I want to get into this now, you know, because I think this is going to take a couple minutes, and I love this about it. But we talked about Asia. We talked about the East versus the West. You know, I want to get into the fact that, you know, what is the – you've seen it firsthand. I grew up that way. I grew up overseas. Those of you that are watching or listening, I had the opportunity, you know, to see things that, you know, most kids never get to see, which I, you know, will forever be grateful to my parents for it, you know, just the fact that I got to live – in Asia. But I want to pick your brain on, you know, the East versus West and their approach to the game, specifically Japan, because you and I both have a love affair with Japan, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that they, in terms of the baseball world, you know, they do things so fundamentally correct. But what do you see in terms of the biggest difference between the East and the West approach to the game of baseball?
Yeah, and let me go back also one more thing to Cuba, too, because it'll mention Japan and other countries. I just mentioned this. You know, the other aspect, remember, most of these countries, you know, we got 26 million amateur players in the U.S.
Right.
Most of these, nobody compares to us when it comes to number of players. So we already outnumber everybody in players. We got great coaches when it comes, you know, to high school, college, pro, and even travel ball, and parents. There's some good parents that can coach also, even though they don't do it full time, and they, you know, but they love what they're doing. So, you know, think about the numbers. These other countries are doing something right. So you mentioned Japan. Now, they're also doing things wrong, right? Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Japan, just like Cuba, the Japanese practice more than they play, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they take it to the extreme, which I think they do it. They practice way too much because a lot of times with their young kids on the weekends, they're practicing, you know, Saturday, 8 in the morning till 7 at night, and Sunday, same thing. That's a lot of hours just to practice and play games in between. So sometimes they overdo it, but fundamentally, they're solid. They have passion for the game. They love the game. I mean, to them, it's almost like a religion. I mean, if you look at high school baseball in Japan, is a great example. Koshian, just Google it, folks. Google Koshian. You'll see the Japanese high school championships, like 46 teams, final teams in one field, four games a day, 20 to 40,000 fans a game, national television, and a single elimination, right? So the Japanese are really good at the fundamentals, but they're also very good at training under pressure, and they're training, and because they train over and over and over again, they can just react to situations. They don't have to think about the situation because they've done it over and over 100 times.
Right.
You know, when remember Tony Dungy in his book talking about anticipating what somebody else is going to do. Well, the way you're going to do that is if you've seen it over and over, now you know exactly what's going to happen in that situation. And I think the Japanese are very good at that. So their passion, their ability to work on fundamentals, their ability to practice a lot, I think that's what makes them really successful. They love the game.
The love of game, right? I love that. Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, you've definitely seen it more than I have. I've been to Japan 100 times, but not in the baseball aspect, right? But just the culture, period.
The culture is the same. The reason they're able to do that, and, you know, the respect they have for the umpires, the equipment, other players. I mean, you know, they don't worry about it. If they get drilled, you've seen it. If somebody hits them with a ball, they just tip their cap. We think that's a sign of weakness. The Japanese look at it as a sign of strength because they worry about what they can do. They don't worry about what you're doing. So if you try to intimidate the Japanese, they're not even paying attention.
No.
They're playing their game, right? No. People wonder, well, why do they bunt so much? Well, because their game is pitching and defense, and if they can get a run or two on you, they think they can win the game because they got great pitching and defense. So, the culture you talk about growing up gives them that ability to be able to do the things they do with their players. We couldn't do that with some of our players because we'd have to really change the culture big time, and it's been drastic. But they're able to do that because, as soon as they're born, they're pretty much born into that culture.
Yeah, it's in the DNA, right?
Yep.
I love it. Hey, I want to make sure we plug before we have about 11 minutes before we're done here. But I want to make sure that we plug your Caliendo Sports International program. I want to make sure we talk about that. Go ahead and tell the people listening what that's all about. So,
Ben, thank you very much, man. It's very simple. For years, I've been taking teams around the world, all ages. If a coach or league is interested in taking a particular team somewhere in the world to compete, and then have a cultural experience, you know, it's about 8 days. Obviously, it's not cheap. It's going to be expensive. Players can raise the money. Fantastic. It's one of the best experiences of a lifetime, in my opinion. Of course, it's my business. We do concentrate heavily on Cuba, Dominican Republic, Italy, and Japan, and for reasons we just spoke about prior to this. The other thing is, if coaches are interested, you know, get a hold of me, because of the fact that, you know, if a coach wants to be part of a program, coaching is very important for us, because when they go overseas, it's all about education, and our coaching staff is part of that education. So that's very important to have great coaches on the trips. Great cultural sports trips. Love them.
COVID's kind of played a little bit of a hiccup, I guess. In that, right?
A big hiccup, like 12 months. Normally, our teams go in Christmas time and in August, and we have not been able to do either one of them right now. But we're hoping that will change here in August. We got some trips coming up.
No, I love it. Well, I love it. Let's also talk about your podcast, Baseball Outside the Box. Tell me a little more about that. I've watched it. I listened to it. I love it.
Yeah, like yours, you know, try to bring on experts in the game to talk about the game, different parts of the game, so either players, parents, or coaches at all levels can hear about why you should be a multi-sport athlete. Why is dealing with pressure and stress, understanding how to deal with those, why is that important, and how do I do that? For coaches, how to work, you know, how to run practices that are successful, right, that translate into real game situations. I mean, there's so many things you could talk about in the game. So we bring in experts in the U.S. and around the world at all different levels, because here's one thing I believe after traveling the world. We always want to focus on our experts in the U.S., but let me tell you, there's some pretty good coaches all over the world, not just in baseball, but in any sport that we can learn from. It's such a global sport that's the fun part about it. So I love having all these people on the show.
I love it. I love it. We're down to the three questions that I always end these with, and I hope this is okay to ask. But what's something most people don't know about you? I mean, you're definitely a baseball guru, but what's something most people don't know about you?
That's easy. Extremely shy. I don't trust a lot of people. More of an introvert in some ways.
Isn't that funny how most coaches are? I'm the same way.
Myself, you know, as far as, you know, I don't open up people, you know, I don't tell the average person, you know, that I just meet everything about myself. It takes a while for me to do that with anybody. So I'm very private. Let's put it that way.
That's what I'm saying now. Yeah, it's so funny how most coaches are like that, because I'm the exact same way. You know, I have a, you know, still to this day, like my circle of trust, circle of friends are the kids that I grew up with, right? It's just, it's funny how that works. I'm the same way.
If I walk into a room, I am not going to meet anybody unless they come up to me. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I love that. What about a chat? If you could have you sit down on a park bench for an hour and just have a chat with anybody, who would it be and why?
You know, I picked baseball, you know, Joe Maddon, because I followed him for a long time. He's got that outside the box thinking, creative. I think he really is a guy. I've been trying to get him on the show, not easy. But him, and I'm going to throw out Sadar Ho, who's a
home run champion. Yeah, I know who that is. Tell the people watching in case they don't know.
He's a home run king, and not only, by the way, not only Japan, but all over the world. Yep. People will argue that, yes, the fields were a little smaller in Japan. That's fine, but great athlete, great person, got a chance to work with him. Had him on my podcast for about 10 minutes, but I needed that full hour really to get a lot out of it. And I love his book. He's got like a Zen book, which is pretty cool. So I think those two would be two that I could think of, you know, right off the top of my head.
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, I definitely know who he is. And just with that, again, back to the Japanese culture, you know, I definitely know who he is. So. Usually I ask, where would you still like to travel to? I'm going to hold that a second, because I want to make sure this last question is between you and I. I don't even care if anybody's listening to this last question, but I'm a diehard Cubby fan. Those that know me know that. I think you are too, right?
Yeah, I grew up more of a Cub fan. You know, it's funny. As a coach, being in the game, I really wasn't a fan. I really didn't follow. So in other words, I hate to say this. I know you're not going to like this part, but I wanted the Cubs to win the World Series, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But now, that evening, when things changed, they said they didn't win it, I still would have slept.
Yeah.
Okay? And I would have slept well. Where other people, really diehards, and I understand it when you're a diehard, boy, you know, you're not going to sleep that evening if they were lost. But yes, I'd say a little bit more of a Cup fan. But if the White Sox do well, I'm with them too.
I look at the White Sox roster right now; they're loaded. What do you think about Tony coming back, Tony La Russa?
Love it. I worked with him in the World Baseball Classic for a week. He was the ambassador. I was on a technical committee. Got to know him. Got to really know him well. And I love the guy. I disagree with everybody out there that says, you know, he's not going to be able to handle it because of his age. You know, this guy's a sharp guy. He's been around. Don't worry about the technology. Don't worry about the statistics. He knows what's going on. He's going to relate to the young players. Matter of fact, he's where he should be on the field and not in the front office, because I think that's not his forte.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that, wow, that actually brings us to the end of this. And we did this perfectly time-wise. I just can't thank you enough. I'm a coach, and I'd love to pick your brain even more, but you're fantastic, and you're definitely an ambassador to the game, and baseball's lucky to have you to pick your brain for. So thank you so much for doing this. I just want to give you maybe about a couple seconds, whatever, if you just want to go ahead and plug anything else, then go ahead.
I just wanted to say, Ben, thanks so much for having me on the show. You know, just for somebody to reach out, you know, like yourself, I know we've talked a few times, you know, to have me on the show. I mean, you could have a thousand other people. And I think that's something that's important that people understand, that, you know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in the game. There's a lot of good baseball people out there. And there's a lot of people that you could have on your show. So thanks for allowing me to do that. The other thing is, folks, if you need to reach me, caliendo19@gmail.com. And my podcast is baseballoutsidethebox.com. Other than that, well, wish you the best, man. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. And I, like I said, I thank you. I'll be picking your brain throughout my upcoming season, because we're going to get going here in a couple of weeks. So hopefully, you know, COVID issues aside, but I'm looking forward to it. The kids last year, we got two games in. I always joke that I should have retired, because we were 2-0 and never gave up a run. I should have just walked away, right? Yeah, but yeah, hopefully everything works out. But I can't thank you enough for doing this. Thank you so much. Stick around, because I want to talk to you even after we hang up here. But those of you that are watching, or those of you that are listening, thank you so much. This has been Season 2, Episode 4 with Mr. Peter Caliendo. Peter, thank you so much, and stick around. We'll talk to you later. Everybody take care. Be safe.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.